So what I'm hoping today is that we will see some of that treasure as a collective through what's preached today, through the movement of God's Spirit, but also there'll be some kind of individual treasure, something within you that's maybe just for you, between you and God, where he'll reveal something to you that's special. So that's what I'm praying for. So please, God, make that happen. So let's go straight into it. What's the context of this parable? Well, Jesus is travelling to Jerusalem for Passover, and he's got his bunch of disciples with him. He's got some women who are potentially paying for his ministry, just in case you didn't know that. And they're going from town to town. They're meeting people on the way. And going to each town, they tend to sit and have some food, right? Or the Bible sometimes puts it as banquets, meals. Some of these are parties. So Jesus was quite out there, you know. He was life and soul of the party. He'd tip up and there would be food there, and he would be talking about these parables, or he'd preach, he'd heal people along the journey. Lots of things would happen. But in this particular parable, he sat with religious leaders. And the religious leaders are a bit narked with him because they don't like who he's sitting with at other parties. He doesn't like the fact that he sat with people who are disabled, who are disadvantaged, who are poor, who can't support themselves financially. The religious leaders felt that they weren't worthy of Jesus's time. And Jesus showed that actually loving everybody was important, that God's kingdom was an inclusive kingdom. And whilst he was on this journey, he would talk about a new way of living where, like I said, everybody's included in the family of God. Sinners, tax collectors, they're all invited into his family and to look at a new way of living, a new way of doing things. He pointed, well, certainly in John's gospel, it points to the fact that Jesus and him are one. So he is the Messiah, he is God. And following him would result in thinking differently about how to resolve conflict, for example, or how to treat the poor, how to handle your finances. A new way of living would result in generosity rather than greed, and anger, rather than anger, forgiveness. So this is kind of the context of what's going on. But when I actually talk about this parable, I want us to do something. So when Mike, thanks for reading earlier, when Mike read the parable earlier, he talked about a son, two sons and a father. One of the sons, the youngest son, has gone off and squandered his inheritance. And the other older brother is a bit annoyed about that when he comes back and the father embraces him back. Okay, so that's the parable in a nutshell. I will explain that a bit further. But what I want us to do today is imagine that the father in the story is God. The prodigal son, the youngest son, right, is somebody who's hurt you. Maybe another church member, I hate to say, or maybe a sibling or a friend. Somebody that perhaps you haven't quite forgiven yet. Okay, someone who's got your goat. Okay, so, and then the elder brother, I want us to imagine that that's us. Okay, so during this whole sermon, I want you to just flitter back to that kind of idea as we're going along. So what's going on in this parable? Like I said, you've got the youngest son goes up to his father and he's basically saying, I wish you were dead because I want my money. I don't want to listen to you anymore. I don't want to do what you're asking me to do. I don't want to live how you're asking me to live. I want to go and do my own thing. So I need some money. Give me some money, you know, and I want to go off and do my own thing. And so his dad, you know, gives him some properties. You know, he seems like quite a wealthy man, but he divides some of his properties, and it looks like this son sells some of that off, has some money, and then he goes off into, away from his community, away from the Jewish community, into, you know, for foreign land with Gentiles, people who weren't Hebrew, Israelite, Jewish. They're all the same people. And he goes and wastes his money. He wastes his money. But then he becomes in need. You know, there's a famine. He's blown all his money. And he hasn't got enough money to eat. And so he goes, he works at a pig's farm. Now, that's really reaching some kind of low, working at a pig farm. Not because there's anything wrong with pigs, but in the Jewish culture, I mean, they wouldn't even eat pig. So to go and actually feed pigs would have really been shameful, according to the Jewish people. So he went and fed these pigs, and even what they were eating seemed appetizing. You know, he was really in need. He was absolutely on the bones of his bottom, okay? He was absolutely, he's lost everything. So what does he think? He thinks, well, I think I'll go back to my father's. And obviously, I'm not going to be worthy to be his son anymore. I've absolutely messed up, but I'm going to go back and see if I can get a job or something, so at least I can eat. And what isn't said in this parable is the custom of Hezazar. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Has anybody heard of a custom called Hezazar? Hands up if you have. No? Okay. Well, excuse me. If you want to know a bit more about the custom of Hezazar, you can look at a book by Kenneth Bailey. He talks about it. If you want details of that book after service, I can give it to you. But he talks about this custom called Hezazar, which means cutting off. So if you disowned your family and took money and went off and spent it, not amongst your people, but you spent it amongst Gentiles, so people who weren't Jewish, right? You would be under this kind of ruling called Kezazar. And Kezazar, the whole community would be involved in this, okay? So when you disown your family, you don't just disown your dad and your brother, you disown the whole community, you know? And the community are kind of responsible for you if you return. And when you come back, what they would do is they'd get a big pot and they'd smash it, and that would symbolise the cutting off in some way. I don't know how, but perhaps the breaking of the pot. Perhaps pots were used for food, and that's like breaking communion in some way. But they'd break this pot anyway, and then the culprit, the guy who'd left the family, left the community, would have to sit outside the gates of the community, and then the community would grill them, and it would be a shameful experience. I mean, they would be, you know, what have you done? Why have you done it? How are you going to make it up? You know, how are you going to pay it back? And you weren't guaranteed to be invited back into the community. And your father wouldn't even be able to be there. Your father would have to wait. And then at some point, the father might come out, and then a decision would be made. If you weren't invited back into the family and the community, you might have to go to a neighbouring community and see whether they'll accept you. So that's a bit more meat to the bone of this parable. So when the son comes back to see his dad, right, and his dad sees him, doesn't he, from a distance, and he decides to run after him in compassion. Now, running, if you were over the age of 25, you might have heard this before, if you were over the age of 25 as a male in Jesus' time, as a Jew, you wouldn't run. That would be seen as, you know, absolutely shameful, dishonouring. You would not run after the age of 25. But, you know, this father, He just runs after his son, sees him in compassion, and takes him and puts a cloak on him, puts sandals on his feet, because, you know, it was only slaves that didn't have sandals. So if you had sandals, you were a son. So he put the sandals on him, put a cloak and a ring, welcoming him back. So that's what we know, don't we? And that was amazing. It's an amazing act of grace and love. That's the gospel wrapped up, isn't it? how, you know, we often, well, through our sin, through the fall of humanity, you know, we've gone our own way and God just, he chases us, he grabs us, he loves us, he accepts us, you know, even though we've massively messed up and we continue to mess up, but God is a loving God. So that's the gospel in a nutshell. What I want to concentrate on is the elder brother. Because when I first read, years ago, when I first read the eldest brother's reaction, you know, and I still do on some level, I really sympathise with him. Really sympathise with him. Because the eldest brother is entitled to more inheritance. Now, I read this in a book by, not Philip Keller, by Tim Keller. And he talks about the issue of inheritance. But, inheritance, even in this day and age, is a bit of a touchy subject, isn't it? You know, it can cause disputes in families. It can be a real sore point, you know, who gets what. But back then, because some of the Jews used to actually marry more than one person. And sometimes what they do is they give the inheritance to their favourite son. And this law of it going to the eldest son, the firstborn son, the eldest firstborn son, kind of stopped that. And it was done in quite a fair way. I know it doesn't seem fair that he'd get more, but there was some wisdom around it. So the eldest son was supposed to get more inheritance. And Tim Keller, in a book I read, The Prodigal Son, he made a suggestion. I don't know if this is accurate, but he makes a suggestion that the son, that when the youngest son is invited back, he's already taken a portion of the inheritance, hasn't he, and blown it. But when he's invited back to be a son again, that he may have, rights to the inheritance again. That by being invited back and being a son again, it kind of goes back to kind of a clean slate where he may, have access to that inheritance again. Now, I don't know whether that's completely true, but I know that there are some authors that have suggested that. And I thought that was really interesting because you can see why the older brother would be really miffed, can't you? Right, you've taken some of this inheritance, you've blown it, and now you've come back to have some more of my inheritance. You know, it seems understandable, doesn't it? I want to read to you again what the eldest brother says. So I'm going straight to the eldest brother's bit. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him, "What's going on?" "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed this fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound." The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, "Look, all the years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him." "My son," the father said, "you are always with me and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." So I don't know about you, I got a confession to make. I've been in a situation where I've been jealous over a sibling and I felt I've had the rougher end of the deal. And it's not a nice feeling when you feel like that toward a sibling or a parent or anyone really. It's horrible feeling like that about somebody. And although I think one of the issues here might have been inheritance, I think there's something we've got to give the elder brother credit for, and that's his honesty. I mean, he was rude to his dad, and I'm not saying we should be rude to parents, you know, but he was honest with him, you know, and we can be honest with our father. We can say, you know, "Lord, I'm a bit annoyed about that. Why has that happened?" You know, it's okay. God can handle our emotions. That doesn't mean, though, we'll necessarily get what we want. You know, this elder brother would have loved, I think, for his dad to have kicked his brother out and then the party be about him, you know, and there's no way that his dad was going to do that. It's also worth noting that it was custom for the elder brother, if there is a party, the elder brother would go in and be a host. And by not coming into the party would have added further shame onto his father. So not only is that father taking the shame of his youngest by, you know, the fact that he squandered the inheritance, he took on the shame by saving him from the Kezezar custom, running after him. He took all that shame that his son would have had to have experienced, the dad saved him from that. And then he goes out to his older son, who's causing him shame because he should be in this party, helping, being loving towards his brother, being a host. But instead, he's angry and he's outside and he won't go in. And he says to his father, and this is really crucial, and I think it highlights a lot about his heart state. He says, "I've been slaving for you, but you didn't even give a young goat. I've been slaving for you, but you didn't even do this for me. I've been slaving for you, but you won't do what I want you to do." And I think sometimes we can get like that. We can have this expectation of God and of people, actually. We can have an expectation that, well, you know, we come to church, we say our prayers, we read our Bible, we do everything we're supposed to do, but life is still difficult. We're still not getting our own way. Why isn't God doing this? Why isn't God doing that? The thing is, God can't be manipulated. And he doesn't actually owe us anything. I mean, that father, he could have said, actually, this is all mine. And you'll get what you're given. But he didn't, did he? He showed absolute grace and compassion to both sons. Both sons who had actually the same heart issue. Because the youngest son thought he was owed. He was owed something. I'm owed my inheritance. I'm owed what I want to do. And the oldest son thinks he's owed a certain response from his dad. That because he's done this, that, and the other, his dad should do this, that, and the other. And we can also feel that about people, can't we? Not just God. We can feel it about people. It's like common decency. You think, right, okay, if I'm nice to somebody and I'm good and I'm friendly or I'm a really good Christian, whatever it is, right, that they should be decent to me, right? And that's kind of normal. It's a normal way to think. But we can't be nice and then automatically assume that that's what we'll get. Actually, showing grace can be far more costly than that. You see, the brother felt hard done by, right? He felt hard done by, and it stopped him from showing love to his younger brother. I mean, his younger brother could have died. There was a famine. If he hadn't come back home, he probably would have died. And rather than his elder brother going, "Do you know what? It's just money. I'm so glad to have you home." His bitterness stopped the love. It stopped him. And bitterness can stop us from showing people love, even when they don't deserve it. Jesus was saying in a roundabout way, when he was saying this, talking about this parable to the religious leaders, he knew the hearts of the religious leaders. They weren't loving disadvantaged. They weren't loving the poor. They were self-righteous, self-seeking like the brothers. And Jesus was saying, you know, grace, an act of love, an act of undeserved blessing, you know, that's given. God's forgiveness is open to all. It's given to everyone who doesn't deserve it. It's not that grace is given to just people who are good, isn't it? Grace is given to all of us, and none of us deserve it. And I think an act of grace is linked very much with forgiveness. It's very hard to show people grace if you haven't forgiven them. And grace, it's difficult. It's very easy to receive it, but it's not necessarily easy to give it. You know, when we show grace to others, it often requires us being at a loss in some way, drawing the short straw. It costs us something. You know, forgiving someone often means that we've got to give up our right to be angry, you know, or feel hard done by. We've got to give that up, haven't we? And sometimes we don't want to give that up. You know, it's like, well, no, they treated me bad. Why should they get away with it? Why should they, you know, why should I have to say I'm sorry? You know, but it costs to give grace. It costs us by putting that down, swallowing our pride. Sometimes, you know, we may think we deserve certain things in life. Like if you're working hard, you might think that you deserve recognition. You deserve a thanks. You know, you deserve appreciation. But actually, grace, right, when you show people kindness and love, do you know what you're likely to get? Do you know what we're likely to get if we're nice and kind to people? Criticism. We're likely to get criticism, you know, because that's what Jesus got, didn't he? So he healed somebody on the Sabbath, right? So somebody's life is completely ruined. He comes up, lays hands on them, restores them to life. Right? And the religious leaders go, why have you healed on the Sabbath? You know? In fact, Jesus got so much grief for being wonderful and kind and loving, they plotted his murder. And then they did kill him. So grace is costly. And sometimes we've got to look at, when we are doing things, we have to look at our motivations for doing them. You know, are we doing them for ourselves, or are we doing them because we're trying to love people like God commands us to? I want to finish off with a parable, and I'm going to just leave it hanging in the air because that just seems fitting, doesn't it, with parables. This parable isn't true, okay? So it's not in the Bible. It's written by somebody called Elizabeth Elliot in a book called Strange Ashes. And she comes up with this little scenario, but it's something to ponder. And I'm going to leave you with this, okay? So, Jesus says to his disciples, oh, carry this stone for me. So, St. Peter, being a practical guy that he is, he gets a really tiny stone, right? So he can put it in his pocket. And the other disciples, they carry these big stones, and it gets to about lunchtime, and Jesus says, right, put your stones down for me. They put their stones down, and Jesus turns them to bread, right? And Peter has got this piddly little bit of bread because he only had a tiny stone, didn't he? And the others have got massive bits of bread, and he's feeling a little disgruntled. So he thinks, right, if he says, carry a stone for me again, I'm going to get a big one. And what does Jesus do? He says, right, carry a stone for me. So he thinks, right, I'm going to get a massive one now. Takes a massive one, ties it to his back, you know, and they're hiking all day. And then eventually it gets to the evening and Jesus says, you know, put your stones in the river. So they chuck the stones in the river and nothing happens. And he's thinking, hang on, I just carried that. And he's annoyed. And Jesus turns around and he knows what's going on in Peter's heart. And he says, Peter, what did I ask you to do? Quiet. He says, I asked you to carry a stone for me. Who were you carrying it for? So we'll leave it there. Okay, well, I just want to say thanks for inviting me. I'm going to do a very short communion. I'm conscious of the time. This is going to be really quick, okay? So I know all of you want to get back for your dinner. We've gone over time today. But this is how we, you know, on occasion, this is how I've done it in the prison. Most of you know I'm a prison chaplain. And, you know, you don't have to worry about germs or anything, because what we're going to do is I'm going to say some prayers, and then each person's going to come up. They're going to take a wafer, okay? I've got normal wafers in here, and I've got some gluten-free wafers here. So if you want gluten-free, you just tell me when you come up, okay? And then what you do is you don't dip all of it into the wine, okay? It's non-alcoholic wine. You dip half of it. So dip half of it, and then you eat it. It's a little bit more Anglican style, okay? And then you eat it and I'll bless you, and then you can go to your seat, okay? So that's how we're going to do it. We're going to start from this side, from the far right, and come into the middle. And then we're going to go from that side into the middle, and then the next row that side. Do you see what I mean? Is that clear? Okay, fabulous. Well, before we do communion, I want us just to watch a quick video. It's about forgiveness. It's a reflective video. So we're just going to sit and listen to that and prepare our hearts before we do communion, okay? Thank you.